How many people are in your village? It might sound like a silly question, as not many of us really live in villages anymore, yet for the vast majority of our entire evolution, we, humans, lived in communities. Communities we depended on for support, for care, and communities that depended upon us. Community-driven purpose was baked into our way of living, baked into many religions and other kind of cultures. And as our brains and our bodies evolved, we expected these things to be there, to pick up the slack. Without that support, or to be honest, that purpose, things can sometimes really get out of balance. Just like we now need to go out of our way to move our bodies so that our bodies operate the way that we were designed to, now that we're not out hunting and gathering all day, we also need to go out of our way to connect with other people that we can rely on and other people who rely on us. Now, if you can use all the fingers on one hand to count the people who would answer the phone and then swing in through the window on a rope made of bed sheets with a dagger between their teeth to help you out, just like you'd do for them, then you are one of the luckiest people in the world. Because whatever problem it was that you made the phone call for, if you got five of them, that problem's now just 20% of what it was. Even if only one person picks up the phone, that problem is immediately half as big. Gus Warland has dedicated his career to helping people, mostly men, actively work on building that village around them. He never really intended to do it, and how he got to do it is a fantastic story. But when he got the call, Gus went all in. This is such a great conversation. I got so much out of it. And I know you will too. We do need to pay the bills though, so we'll be back after the break.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
G'day, this is Better Than Yesterday, helping you make today better than yesterday since 2013. My name is Oshie Ginsberg. I am a podcaster. I am a best-selling author. I am an annoying husband, an annoying dad, an annoying stepdad. Not always, however, definitely today. Anyone who tells you they are not otherwise is lying. I am trying to be less annoying today, but so far my efforts are not yet hitting the mark. I'll be changing strategy as soon as I'm finished recording this because it's important. My guest today is Gus Warland. He's a super successful radio show. He is a super successful radio host, sure, and you can hear him on Triple M, which is a radio network in Australia. However, Gus's work with the organization that he founded, Gotcha for Life, well, that is what truly sets him apart from his peers. The way that Gus talks about prioritizing people that matter, that is absolutely something I needed to hear the day that he came around here. I think you might just be grateful to hear what Gus has to say today as well. Enjoy the chat. you know, how can I just get this a little better? What can I do to improve this? Because I get a great amount of joy in learning new things, and not saying that I'm never satisfied, but like, maybe there's a way to just being curious.
Yeah.
And there's humility as well. It's like, maybe I haven't got it right.
Self-awareness and curiosity has been the change in my life over the last 5 or 6 years. Just, I'm curious on why you think that.
Isn't that golf's ultimate journey?
Why you're doing it that way. I should do it that way. I'm curious to find out. It's great.
I got my drive is 190. I'm making up numbers. My drive is 193 metres. How can I get it to 195?
Yeah.
Like, how can I get... Yeah, maybe that's why golf is what it is, because you're just approaching zero.
Yeah. Well, I don't know any golfers, people who love golf, that aren't a little bit how you going though as well. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
even if you're really good, it's hard.
You know, for people that aren't aware of you, we get a lot of people listening from overseas and things like this.
Sure.
You're a guy on radio. You're like, here I am in radio. It's fucking great.
Yeah.
I'm on the radio on Triple M.
Until I think I was 38. I was a salesman and told by everyone you could sell ice to Eskimos, that type of character.
Well, of all the things, I've did sales for 3 straight hours once. That's the shortest job I've ever had.
Okay.
What was your gig?
Well, my grandfather told me that I'll be able to sell, but only if I believed in the product. And I always remember my granddad. Gordon Whitehead, his name was, and he was a salesman. And he said to me, if you believe in the product, you'll be unstoppable. So the one that absolutely comes to mind and where I feel I feel happy that I did this, Toshiba laptop computers, right at the start of when laptops were only for the CEO.
Yeah, right.
And they were $8,000 or $9,000 a pop. 8 years later, after working in laptops.
1 meg of RAM.
Oh, yeah, not even that. I'm not even sure.
With a 500 kilobyte hard drive.
We had a 256 megabyte, like, extras, and then the bag that it went in was $150 from Targus and all this sort of stuff. Anyway, by the end of my time at Toshiba, which was over in England working for Toshiba, we were giving the machines away as long as you bought the dongle from British Telecom or something like that. So I went through all of that with IT, and I didn't want to be selling laptop computers when I was 40. I remember that. And at 38 years of age, I got an opportunity to do an Aussie Goes series, which was, you know, the start of me being in media. And I did that, and then eventually I was promoting that show on Triple M, and the boss of Triple M was in a taxi between the airport and the station in Melbourne one morning. Perfect timing for me. And he goes, that guy tells a good story. He asked where I was from when he saw me later that day, and I said Sydney. And he at the time needed the Sydney Brekkie show to be a bit different. So my first gig in radio ever, Sydney Breakfast.
This is great. That's awesome.
It was great. And I had 10 years doing that with two mates, and well, actually more than that in the end with all the different changes. But, yeah, loved it.
Every now and again, there's, you know, some of the most successful people I know they're the people who are at 17. Like, I think about Jet Wilkinson. She's incredible. She called Channel 7 every day going, is there a job on Home and Away? No. Hang up. Next day. Is there a job on Home and Away? No. Hang up. Next day. She called every day for like 12 months until one day somebody said, just come in and read some scripts. We need people to check the spelling. Now she's one of the most high-powered women directors in the world. As far as steep learning curves go, there would have been a...
Well, I remember...
I love your story there, Gus, but 5 minutes is too long.
Don't worry. The first break I've had, because they wanted to put the show together, so they said I was living in England. They flew me back. I became a platinum person for Emirates inside of like 8 weeks. I flew back and forth, business class. This is back in the day, about 4 or 5 times, like nearly once every couple of weeks. They'd go, okay, well, you can go back now. By the time I got back, I needed to sort of do a Yui at Heathrow. And I remember him saying, okay, who would you like to have in the team? And
fuck me dead.
That type of thing.
Holy shit.
And I'm like, well, how about we put a list together and I'll have a chat to all of them, you know? And I had no idea what was going on. Anyway, I remember Gus Gould, the rugby league coach.
Yeah.
I said, well, he'd be interesting, maybe not in the team, but maybe someone that we could go to.
Yeah.
First break with him, 17 minutes. And it was a great chat. We had a great chat. Well, I was doing podcasting before I realized what podcasting was. And he said, great chat. Thanks for coming in, Gus. And off Gus went. And then Jamie takes me in the room and goes, right, we need to get to the point. We need to get through it. And we need to be into another song inside of 3.5 to 4 minutes.
I went,
oh, Okay, so that was the start of me learning that skill set.
It's super important, though.
Yeah.
But yeah, because people are busy. But that you had that they saw that in you. That's extraordinary.
Well, I remember Guy Dobson. You might have come across him.
He's the man that wrote No Rap Crap.
Yeah, that's right.
That was him.
Yeah, so Dobbo was
always... Whether you agree or disagree with it, we all remember it.
He's a weird cat, there's no doubt. But he was always nice to me, and he said to me, radio's changing, and I want to be a part of this.
Yeah.
And Triple M's got such a great culture with sort of sport, comedy, and rock and roll. I just want to put like a show that men of Sydney would just turn it on and know that it'll be their station. And, I think we came in at a 2.2 and we went to a 4.6 inside of the first survey. And I think we peaked at like an 8, but we were basically around a late 6s, early 7s, which for Triple M at the time, they had Kyle and Jackie O on Today FM.
Yeah.
So we had the number one overall, and then we had the number one for men. And as a business model, that worked great until they let Kyle and Jackie O go to Kiss. Well, go and then Kiss.
Well, the story goes. Look, I'm sure it'll all come out in the wash.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll come out in the wash. But that's a freaking amazing adventure. What did you say? So 33 years you've been married. Hey, honey, we're going to move countries.
Yeah.
On a gig that I've never done before. How was that conversation?
Well, they first offered me a 6-month contract. I was living in England. We just bought a house. We had like a orchard and like stables and like we're right in the middle of nowhere. It's a county called Lincolnshire, which is the biggest county in terms of like size, but there's nothing there. It's all agricultural land. And a lovely little village, 2 pubs, general store. You probably get the pick it up. Loved it. Just bought our first place there. And I come back from Australia going, I was promoting an Aussie Goes Calypso. Well, I've been offered a job on breakfast radio. They're going to come back in the next couple of days with an offer. I'm like, here we go. And they offered me a 6-month gig, which I knew was ridiculous to move the family, da da da. So the next offer was 2 years.
So hang on, how old are the kids at this point?
Jackie Boy was 5, Ella was 3, and Abby was 1. And we were happy. And Vix was in a village with her sister, her nephew. Like, we were done.
Everybody knows your name. Like, why do we want to go anywhere?
Absolutely.
How many zeros is it going to take to get us all on a plane?
And I actually loved being in England too. Yeah. Like, I wasn't one of these Aussies that went, I married an English girl, so I've got to stay here. I loved it.
Yeah.
So they offered me 6 months. I said no straight away. They then came back with a 2-year offer. And, Sydney brekkie is good dough. So I said, well, Dale, like, if it absolutely crumbles, the worst case scenario, let's keep this place and we'll go back there for a couple of years. So Vic said, well, I'll stay for the end of the school year with the kids, which is September in England. You go back and let's see what happens. So we started building the show in June and that was 2009.
Boy, oh boy.
She was so supportive. I can't tell you how supportive she was. She was just incredible. And when I think about it now even more, I didn't quite appreciate it at the time because I was so excited myself that I was going to continue this dream of media because, as I said, I was a salesman until I was 38.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, someone's saying you can do this for longer?
Yeah.
Yes, please.
I'm also very fortunate that I have an excellent CFO.
Right.
And she's very supportive. And she understands long-term numbers and she way more than me. I didn't do very well in maths. And everything really turned a corner. It was like just one morning. Wasn't it? We have our choices. When particularly breakfast radio, you're paid to bring a version of you to work. You're paid to bring, and they often kick you out the door at like 10:30, 11 o'clock. Go out, live a life.
Yeah.
Drive home a different way. Go to a different supermarket.
Everything's content. You need something
to talk about tomorrow. Do not do your normal routine. They're very keen on that.
They are, yeah.
And so they're very encouraging. But, then there's a line that you have around, like if your kid called you a fucking something or other, you kind of want to protect them a bit. So you don't tell the whole story. You're like, acting up. You censor it to protect people. So there's a version.
Well, it took me a while to work that out.
Yeah.
I didn't necessarily work that out very quickly.
Yeah.
When Vic said to me once, I dropped the kids off at Manavale Public School, and one of the mum goes, I can't believe Gus spoke about that this morning on the radio. And she's like, what did he say? And I was talking about being intimate. I was talking about how long it took. And it's because I was desperate desperate to be the guy that had the content, because I was with a couple of guys that had played for Australia that had won Origin Series, that had, you know, so I was like, well, what can I possibly offer? And I'm completely starstruck thinking I want to keep this going. So I overstepped many times.
And you had a-
And then when I overstepped with the kids, once they were old enough to know and I spoke about stuff that they had done or they had told me, or on a, one morning I said my favourite child was my son, not my daughter's.
Fuck me.
Like, what are you doing, mate? Like, just idiot. It's been a long journey for me.
So even with that, there was some stuff going on in your life that one day you just turned up and you decided to talk about.
Yeah. Well, basically, by then, I was 6 years into The Breakfast Show, and I had wanted to talk about my friend who had taken his own life for a long time, but I didn't feel like I was worthy of taking the time away from jokes and music and competitions to slow the whole mood down and say, hey, I'm going to talk about something here that no one talks about.
Yeah.
And I remember, and you would know this, 4:30 in the morning, all the producers are running around, you're sitting there and you're going, we're going to build a show. We're on in an hour and a half, 6 o'clock, and at the moment it's an empty show. So we're going to start filling it. And I said, can I have a spot? I just want to talk about a friend of mine who took his own life, and everyone's like, whoa, where's this gone? And I've been thinking about it for a while, and I don't know why guys don't talk about this stuff more. And I think there's so many blokes listening to us, maybe it'd be therapeutic for me, but it might be good for our listeners. Anyway, REP at the time is a bloke called Matthew Riley. He goes, let's do it out of 8 o'clock news, which you would know is prime time.
Yeah, prime time. That's it. Yeah.
So I got a bit nervous then because I thought we might shimmy it in at 6:15 and no one would hear it.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so I spoke about it and I took about 3-4 minutes. Maddie and MG were very kind to me. My role in the show was them taking the piss out of me a lot of the time.
Yeah.
That did not happen that morning. In fact, it was a beautiful, quiet, allowed me to say it, no interruptions. Yeah. And then they came around after we went to the break and they gave me a hug and said, mate, that was awesome.
Yeah.
The producer then comes in and goes, we've got a whole heap of people want to thank you for the call, but more importantly, tell their own story.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, what do you think we should do? We said, well, let's just take some. Anyway, Triple M, 90 minutes later, we've played no music, no news, no traffic updates. We've just had one call after another. I then drove home that day and said to my wife, in just our small little pocket of Sydney, Australia, who listened to Triple M, we had 90 minutes of back-to-back phone calls. Imagine what it's like in the world. I wonder how many other people are worrying alone.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough that I then was able to get some funding through some wonderful producers and production company to do the show Man Up.
Yeah, yeah.
Which really changed my life forever because I was never quite the same again. And I was curious for the first time ever. And Man Up changed my life.
Mate, I've got goosebumps sitting over here. That's why I fucking love radio. There's no other format that you can do that with. You can't do that with television.
No.
Radio, you just go, okay. Let's go. You literally Wallace and Gromit building the tracks in front of you as you go.
Yeah.
And if you have people with vision who share where you're going, and if it's they made the choice because it's fucking compelling, all right? And it's everything is compelling. It's relatable. It's something we don't talk about, but it seems that it's safe enough and we're doing it in a safe way. We're not making jokes. We're understanding. We all seem to be very aware of like how careful we have to be and language around talking about this kind of stuff. Yeah. But it, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's like endometriosis. No one fucking talks about it. It affects so many women and is devastatingly painful.
Oh, yeah.
But we don't speak about it, right? When you I talk about this, right? 8 people are going to die today by suicide. 3/4 of them are going to be men. If 30-something people died every week in plane accidents, they would close every fucking airport.
Yeah.
Tomorrow. Well, that'd be it.
Car crashes, same thing. It's double the road toll.
We'd fucking figure it out as quick as can be. So it's ridiculous to not talk about it, and it's only in talking about it that we can demystify the fear of speaking about it. And it's the frightening statistics, and there's nobody who's listening that doesn't know somebody who has died by suicide.
Yeah.
And that's fucking fucked.
Well, when you talk about those numbers, 65,000 attempt suicide as well. So add that to the equation.
That's the other thing.
So we've been chatting now for 10, 15 minutes. Yeah, someone right. has attempted in Australia.
Jesus.
So you think of the MCG three quarters full.
That's every year.
Every year that attempt. And then it's actually 7 men, 2 women, 9 Aussies. So, and when I told those, I did a TED talk last year, I was right in the middle of the conference and I was nervous going in doing the actual chat. So I was like, okay, I've got to learn as much as I can from other people in front of me, how it all works and so forth. And then afterwards, I was on such a high that I was just at the conference every day giving cuddles out. Because I said to everyone needs to be nicer to each other. And we're a bunch of people that are just lucky to be here. So let's tell everyone that we love, send them a text message. And then people just showed me their text messages and these long conversations and then said, can I get a hug? And I must have given a couple of thousand hugs away. And then I flew home. So I never got my donut and coffee, but I'll send you a photo when I do that this April. I actually went to Vinnie Jones's 40th birthday.
Get the fuck out of here.
He was doing Swordfish with Jacko. One of Jacko's first films in LA.
Now, let me just be clear. We're not talking about Mark Jacko Jackson. No. I'm an individual. You can't fool me.
No.
We're talking about Jean Valjean.
Yes.
No, we're talking about Hugh Jackman.
We are. Yeah. We went to kindy together. When things started going well for him, he was doing Swordfish. He had just got Oscar, who's my godson, who was about 6 months old.
Yeah.
And he actually became a Jackman only a few days after this party because we went to a court in America.
Yeah,
this beautiful grandmothery type judge, took Oscar in his arms and sort of said, you are now.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. But the couple of nights before, it was
just Vinnie Jones. Just for people who were like this is the adoption was finalized.
The adoption was finalized. Yes. He became a Jackman.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we had Jack, who was only a month older than Oscar.
Ripper.
So we had a lovely time. We went to Vegas for a night. Came back for Vinnie Jones's 40th birthday. And I remember Jacko going, I've got to buy him a present. And he went to this place. And I remember last time I bought a present with Jacko, it was like $20 in each for the 21st,
Yeah.
All of a sudden he bought like a leather bound where you'd put a script.
All right.
And you'd put the script into this leather bound thing because Vinnie was on his journey to become, actor. And it was like $300 US. And I was like, you're spending $300 on Vinnie Jones. And he was like, yeah, I think that's what I have to do. Like, I think it's like we're adults now. We need to buy proper presents and stuff. Like we were, how old were we? Like 30.
Wow.
Anyway, and he's kept in contact with Vinnie. Vinnie's obviously gone on to do many things.
Yeah.
And he still has that leather bound script case or whatever you'd call it.
Wow.
It's always a fun story. And that night was unreal. Like, you can imagine Vinnie Jones's party was in a nightclub in LA and it was like,
I'm guessing.
I remember getting there but not getting home, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think he's sober these days.
Yeah.
He said it wasn't
that night.
Yeah, he says he had a great line because he showed up on Masked Singer. He had this great line.
Oh, yeah.
He had this great line of, my lawyer told me, like, you can keep drinking or you can run out of money. He says it was something like, I had to stop drinking because the lawyers were costing me too much.
Yeah, because he plays up, right?
But it you talked about self-awareness before. If even Vinnie Jones eventually puts two and two together, go, oh, you know what? Me and alcohol? It never works out okay.
Yeah.
Maybe as much as I reckon I can stop, I actually can't stop doing the things that get me into trouble. Maybe I just won't have a drink and see what happens. What do you reckon? Like,
everything works out okay.
Yeah. When I have an allergy to alcohol. When I drink, I break out and fuckwit. side effects include, divorce, sleeping on
a dick.
Sleeping on your friend's couch and daddy issues. Like, it goes on. Financial ruin, everything. Like,
other than that.
It's nearly 14 years. Fun.
Wow.
But yeah, I was lucky in that I found that. And
how are you about that? Are you. It's part of your life now, right?
It's really clear. I had to trick myself into it.
Okay.
I grew up in Queensland, man. I'm like, we're drinking? I'll bring my gumboots. Because that's where we went.
Let's go.
Until there was vomit. That is what drinking was.
So you just went having a couple of beers and driving home?
Never. I couldn't. Never, ever, 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 ever. And I knew I was different. I knew I couldn't. I mean, but that was self-medicating, right? Alcohol wasn't my problem. Alcohol was my solution.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the amount that I needed to feel at all okay with anybody, even people I knew well, were worse when I was alone to make everything gushush. That amount was going to kill me. And the choices I was making, you know, it just...
You're actually having a successful career through this point too, right?
Well, it was starting to all come to pieces.
Okay.
Because of the... You know, because of the choices I was making. And it eventually did. I ended up unemployed, paying rent out of my savings in a foreign country, sleeping in my friend's spare room.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Divorced and without a house and with, you know, no super, you fucking name it. Like all of that. I thought I'd get a different story. No, I got the same story as everybody else. I thought I was special. Nah,
yeah.
Same. But what I was really lucky about is that things happened to me in a linear order, I think. And so when I got really sick, and I was, you know, struggling with episodes of psychosis and suicidal ideation and things like that. Thank fuck I was sober, because there's absolutely no way I'd still be alive if I was drinking during that time. Because when we drink, fuck it, it's the easiest thing that came out of our mouth. Fuck it, I'll have another one. Fuck it, I'll buy that thing. Fuck it, I'll put another multi on. Fuck it, I'll, you know, go home with this person who I probably shouldn't go home with or whatever. I would have got the fuckets, man, and that would have been it. So I got really, really lucky, but I know not everybody is like that. And that was the reason I wanted to talk about it, because when those thoughts started to come to me, they weren't what I'd thought. And I'd lost friends to suicide, but they weren't what I thought they would be. I thought it was going to be like when it's not kind of working out and you got to call her and say, or go and say, oh, can I meet you? And go have a coffee and say, listen, I can't, wait. You know, you could, like, I thought it would be like this nervous feeling of I've got to break up with someone or, and I've got to do this thing and it's really bad. Nah, it was like, hey man, I've got the best solution ever for the amount of pain you're in right now. Just follow me. I'm going to make it all better. And everything's going to be awesome. Quiet, finally. I'm going to wrap you up in a big warm blanket and you'll feel fucking safe and amazing. You know what? When you go surfing and your hands get so cold you can't open the car, right? And you're just dreaming of that warm shower at home. That's what it was. It was the warm shower. It was the, mate, it's going to be fucking great. Everything's going to be quiet. Just shh, just come with me. But I knew, because I'd learned to meditate not long before that, I knew, it was like, hang on a fucking second, that doesn't feel right. Why would I ever consider that as an actual idea? Maybe this is the distorted idea as well. And so then I was able to notice it. And once I got really fucking lucky. And so when that happened to me, I was like, I have to tell people. I have to tell people that it shows up like a cable knit sweater your mum knitted you, and it's the warm, most comfortable thing you've ever had in your life. It's not this scary thing. And because I was the guy who, when I lost my mate, it's like, selfish fuck, he's gone, you know, because I thought of that Sting song, all this guilt will be on your head, that song, I can't stand losing you.
Yeah,
I thought it was that. It's not. It's fucking not.
Well, your situation was like that. I've spoken to so many people over the last few years that it was so dark and narrow that it seemed like the only option was just to get out of it, because they were so tired and they were in so much pain.
Exhausted.
So this different way is the exhaustedness. And of course, I think you and I and all the listeners know that you make bad calls if you're tired and in pain at the same time.
Oh, man.
And for me, it's giving people the emotional muscle to be able to reach out and ask for help so they don't worry alone as for long, so we can get them before it gets to that crisis point. Building that emotional muscle, like in primary school kids, all the way up. We've just started a primary school scheme at Gotcha for Life, and that's going to be the future.
What do you teach primary school kids?
Well, all about the emotion. Like, everyone knows muscles and running and jumping and climbing trees and on the thing. What about the invisible muscle in your head?
Right.
Those need help. They need support. So it's the mental fitness gym rather than the physical gym. And no mirrors here, no judgments here, but here's some skills and exercises for you to be able to work on these very important, as you know, muscles in your head that can be so influential.
What do they look like?
Well, emotional muscles, for me, they come out in all different ways. When you're really super excited about stuff, you're looking forward to stuff, you've got that anticipation, you know, and actually going and doing good stuff, but also all the negative and the sad stuff too, and not being able to cope when their people are, you know, picking at you for your body weight or looking at you because you've got red hair or because you've got freckles or all that nastiness that that can happen quite early in kids' lives, having enough emotional muscle to deal with that, but also have the strength to be able to stick your hand up and tell mum and dad or tell the teacher so you don't worry alone about stuff and you don't learn to push it down and go, oh, well, that's just the way it is. I'm just going to cope. No, no, you don't have to do that. We've learnt that 7 blokes a day and 2 women a day and 65,000 attempt. That's the equation of how we used to do it. We're not doing that anymore.
Right.
We know stuff, so we're going to do things differently.
And this is I understand, like, Georgia was 10 when I became a stepdad, right? So I'm a parent with no parenting experience of a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
I made some errors, all right? I'm still trying to make up for those things.
Right? I've been a dad 3 times up to the age of 10, and I was making errors when they were 10, 11, 12. So it ain't an easy gig.
It is. Yeah, it's the part of fatherhood that people never talk about is stepfatherhood. I have a few issues about how dads are portrayed in Australia. Like every ad is dumb fat dad, you know? No.
It upsets me when I see that.
Tears.
It really does.
The fucking thing.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man.
We're better than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was it like? So when you fall in love with a lady who's got a child, did you even think about that as a combo, or did you just go, no, I'm just going to love the mum and everything else will be okay?
Nobody chooses really to fall in love. You know, you're just there.
Yeah, but you can walk away.
You can, but oh my God, no, no. I keep the photo on my desk. See that photo there?
Yeah.
They came to visit me in America, and that was our third day in Disneyland, second day in Disneyland, and she dressed up as Snow White and Audrey's doing her hair that morning. And I took a photo of it because I'm like, oh, this is it. There's nothing left in America for me. I'm done. I don't need to chase. There's nothing, because I was there like career.
Of course,
it's like, no, there's nothing.
You weren't on a holiday.
Nothing as good as this. I'm out.
I was just in that moment.
Well, I fell in love with Audrey, and then, from one day to the next, she was my girl. George is my girlfriend's kid, all right? And then the next day I woke up and I was like, every dollar I earn from now on is to make sure that you have everything you need in life and you can achieve everything you ever want. And if I needed to push you out of the way of a fucking out of control car, I would die if it meant you would be alive. And I was like, I'm a selfish fuck. How did that happen? Like that. Because I'd seen that change in my friends who had kids, and I didn't know it was available as a stepfather.
Yeah.
But it is, man. Like, oh my gosh. I was fine. And then the next day, I can't watch an ad that involves a kid stubbing their toe. From one day to the next.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a journey, man. It's a journey.
You're a lucky man.
Tell me about it.
You could have gone down such a different path.
It can't. I know it's hard. It's a, you know, that's a thing I'm kind of exploring. It's the fatherhood that we don't talk about. Mm. It's the stepfatherhood. And it's a completely different set of requirements. And it's a different set of expectations, because you can never expect to be number one, ever, 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 ever. She has a great relationship with her dad.
I was going to ask you the next
question.
Great
relationship with her dad. Audrey and he, they worked really hard to make sure that whatever was happening between them never got in the way of their love for her. And they really, really worked their asses off to make that happen. And as a result, she's got an amazing relationship with him. And
what's your relationship with him?
He's like a great bloke. Yeah, I really like him. He's very clever. He's a really great guy, and I couldn't be more happy to, you know, be on this, you know, adventure. And, you know, we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out the first time. And it's fucking lovely. But when it comes to the programs that you're doing, why do you think it was that you're a businessman, you're a sales guy, you're looking for gaps in the market? Ideally, you would have gone, I've told this huge story on the Breakfast Radio. Ah, there's no space for me because this is already taken care of. Like, how did we get to a point where this was just so missing in our education?
I suppose for me, once I'd done the chat on the radio, Jennifer Cummins, she came and said, I've got some money, the ABC are interested, let's go. To me, that was still probably a job.
You're right.
At that point. Very quickly in the filming, we had, I think, enough money for about 60 odd days filming.
Yeah.
And I reckon at day three.
60?
Yeah.
Jesus, TV budget's not what they used to be.
And that's, yeah, that's probably true too.
Is that ABC money? Fuck.
Yeah. Well, we hadn't quite worked out who was going to do it at that point, but we thought the ABC would be the brave enough to show it. Anyway, we ran out of money after 45 or something like that. And there was a lot going on. There was a change of editors. It went from being a research-based scientific type mind thing to me being me. This has got to be coming from the heart. Mm. It's got to be human. It's got to be more personal.
Yeah.
So a lot happened through that. But very early on, I went, this is something that I'm going to be proud of for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And I don't know what else I have to do. Do I become a Movember guy or an Are You Okay Day guy? I'll be doing something in this field. And then I realized that at the end of Man Up, and it had gone so well, I went, I think I need to be more positive around this particular subject, which is hard. Suicide and suicide prevention tends to always be dragged down. It's mental health. It's bottom of the barrel. It's the numbers. It's difficult.
Yeah, it's reminding people of the friend they lost. I don't want to know about it. I don't want to talk about it.
So, and the stigma goes, I'm out.
Yeah.
So I started thinking about mental fitness and exercises to work on your emotional muscle, the invisible muscle that is so important. So how can we make that happen? Gotcha for life. I was sitting there with a mate and he goes, so you're just someone who's just gotcha. And I said, yeah, gotcha for life. And he said, that's it.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, right, okay, that's it. And I had lots of smart people and friends going, you're onto something here. The more positive spin on it all, you know, we've raised $17 million.
Oh,
and we've got a little bit of state funding, like a few hundred thousand. But, you know, we want more because I want to scale this so much better. But at the end of the day, it's something that I now do around radio that is going to be my legacy because the numbers are still horrific. We need to see this as a different opportunity. We need to see it as a fitness, not a health thing. And we need to give young kids in particular skills so they don't worry alone, to stick your hand up and ask for help. When I talk to people that have tried to take their own life and they're still with us, they were tired, they were in pain, but they didn't want to die. At the bottom line of it, like you, didn't want to die. So it gave me hope that if we can get to people when there are 2 or 3 out of 10, we're building up the mental fitness from a primary school kid. A school can be a mentally fit community.
Yeah.
Then the parents are involved. And all of a sudden, we're slowly but surely building a young kid's mental fitness up over time. They'll put their hand up a little closer to the lifelines of this, who do an amazing job. But
They carry a lot of weight, those guys. Yeah,
I said to Lifeline, I did a thing for them, and I said, I want everyone in Lifeline unemployed in 5 years.
Wouldn't that be
something? I want no one phoning you up, and I want you sitting around going, well, it's 2 weeks in a row now we haven't had a call.
Wow.
You go to a call centre in Balgala, and I saw there was 1,788 phone calls that night, and I'm like, you put the phone down, and those guys, it rings again. It just rings off the hook. And these guys need breaks. They need a cup of tea. They need to go out and have a ciggy or whatever. They've got no time for that. And these people on the other line could literally have their life in their hands.
Yeah.
So once you've had that experience, you realize that we need to get into the prevention space more.
Yeah. We teach kids, oh, if you've got a snotty nose and you start to get a bit of a chill, and you take your temperature and you realize it's over something or other, you tell, you know, you tell mum or dad, can you check my temperature? He's not feeling very well. We know I might have to stay home from school. I might need to take Panadol. Maybe we'll have to go see a doctor. We see warning signs of maybe there's an infection. Could just be a virus. Let's go check.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
Let's see if it's not something worse. We don't do that for mental health. And I don't see it as any different. What are the warning signs? Have I been shouting? Did I just shout the last three things I said? Yeah, I think. Have I slept more than 12 minutes in a row for the last week? Have I eaten anything? Am I, like, on a first name nod and wink to my bottle-o guy? I might make a call here. Am I doing nothing but, like, just streaming RedTube all day while I try to, you know, emotionally just, like, use sensation to try to keep these thoughts at bay? Until, you know, the sorbolene runs out or whatever, like, you know, compulsive behavior, avoidant behavior. We don't
Is this my time where I say I don't know what red tube is?
No, this is the time where, you know, we talk about, you know, I mean, it's a big deal.
It is.
My God, I was fucking right there. Let me tell you about
it. On many levels.
And so, yeah, having that as a, you know, helping people understand the warning signs earlier on, it's not a, nobody's weak for doing it. Nobody's a wuss for doing it.
It's the opposite.
Yeah.
It's the manliest thing you can do. And at the end of the Man Up program, he said it's man up, speak up. It's not man up, shut up anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Because man up, shut up has got us to where we are now. So, yeah. And then I've soon worked that out, that within a couple of years that it's actually a human issue. So it's actually human up and speak up. Yeah. So we're at the stage now where I believe the next generations are better than my generation and your generation. But we're nowhere near where we need to be in terms of the preventable space. I can't tell you how many ceremonies I've been to, barbecues, fundraisers where someone has lost someone in their community. Mm. I want to go to the fundraiser. I want to go to the barbecue. I want to go to the dinner when they haven't had one and they're going, you know what? We're building the mental fitness up. We're building the emotional muscle. Yeah. We are getting mentally fit. That's why we're having all these workshops in our schools. That's why we've got these workshops in the sports clubs. That's what we need to get to, not being reactive. And unfortunately, you know, it's so sad and emotional when you go. Vicky and I only went to one. My wife and I only went to one last Sunday. And it's just, it's still devastating for mates, family, and no one sees it coming. And my mate, 1,000 of us at the funeral, stick your hand up, mate. One of us would have helped you.
Yeah.
Or don't tell any of us, but go to a professional. You've got enough money, do it.
You can't see it, mate. When you're in it, that's the thing. You cannot.
No.
You can't see it. When you're inside it, it all feels as real as that glass of water feels in your hand. And there's no. I know what it's like. My brain was so gone, and my ability to discern reality from not was like it was. Like you are telling me fairy stories if you're telling me this thing isn't real.
Yeah.
And I can't believe you.
Yeah.
You know, because it's really, really scary when you get to that point. It's wild. We have this crazy double standard. You know, if we've all been, you know, to workplace inductions, even if you work in an office, you work in a workplace induction. And there's the message of, you know, if you kind of walking past an office desk and you see that one of the chairs is missing a caster and, you know, Gavin is off at the toilet and you're worried that, hang on a second, he might come back and sit in that, not realise, fall and bust his shoulder. I'm going to say something. Good for you, mate.
Yeah.
Job well done. Why is there this double standard when it comes to noticing what might be going on with their friends?
Yeah. Well, that's a good point, but also men are very rarely showing signs that they need a lot of help. That's the other thing. Like a mate of mine said to me the other day, he said, you know, I've been a bit down lately and no one's really checked in on me. I said, the point is, big fella, you're feeling down. You ring me and say, I'm feeling down. Then I run because I'm doing a whole heap of things.
Yeah.
You have enough emotional muscle to have the guts to say, Gus, I need your help.
Yeah.
That's what we need to get to, because there's a whole lot of people out there that have got that mask on so tight, making out that everything is awesome when it's not. We need to turn that around to say, you know, just like, if I walked in now and I had a bit of a limp, you go, what happened? Oh, I played some tennis the other day and I just nibbled my knee and I'm seeing the physio after this. All tick, tick, tick.
Yeah.
Totally get it, understood.
Yeah.
If I'd walked in and said, mate, mentally I'm a bit off at the moment, that discussion I could probably have with you because where we are and the journeys we've had. But for most people, they'll look at me like, why are you telling me that for? I just asked you how you were. I didn't need to know that you're not right in the head. We need to change it so that physical injury is the same as the mental one.
Just a moment away to let you know that if this show brings you value, please share the show. You can hit that little arrow in the corner or the hamburger or the three dots. I don't know what you listen to this on, but just share it with someone that you think needs to hear it. Screenshot it. Put it on your feed. I don't mind. Just tell people about the show. Do subscribe, do follow where you can. It really helps us a lot. It doesn't cost you anything, helps us heaps. I'd love it if you could leave a review on the show wherever you can. Please put it there. If you need to get in touch with me, pretty easy to find.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Get me on Instagram. We're back in a moment with Gus. When I speak on stage, I talk about how I was very well supported. I went through all this shit while I was on air, right? And
which show were you doing at
the time? I was on season 2 Bachelor.
Right.
And there's articles getting written about, oh, I can't fit his suits and da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm fucking antipsychotics. I'm putting on a kilo a week, you cunts. Back off.
Yeah.
Trying to stay alive.
Right? But you're on the most glamorous show on TV.
Yeah.
You're standing there. You're the host and stuff. So you're a bit untouchable. They think that you're not a human being for that period of time.
But work new. I told my boss, and similarly to how you describe your tennis injury, if you pretend tennis injury, I said, this is what's happening, and these are the doctors that I'm seeing, and this is the routines that I'm on, and this is what's happening, and this is, you know, all the things I'm doing to make sure that I can still do the job. So in one breath, I let him know what was happening, and I took responsibility for it, and I told him my plan of action. Therefore, it's not his problem to fix. He just said, so what do you need from me? And that was it.
Good answer.
And it was... If I can do that, like I wouldn't pressure anybody to disclose because I don't know your work site. But when you make it not someone else's job to fix, I'm not a physio. I can't help you with your tennis thing.
Yeah.
Right? But if you were going, I don't know, I'll be fine. Like, nah, is it? Are you sure you haven't just got like some weird spiral fracture because you're an old man now? Like things get hurt. They're probably something not great. You don't bounce back anymore. So similarly, it's the same thing. And like I'm in my sobriety adventures, I got taught really early before you pick up a drink, pick up the phone. All right? Because it's, I need to check. I need to check with someone. Like I just need to talk to someone because my brain's telling me this is a really good idea. I know it's not. So I'm going to talk to you about a better solution than this because this right now is coming up as the best idea that I've got. All right? And the other person, I've been the other person on the phone, the other person on the phone will go, well, let's talk about what else is going on. And like, within 5 minutes, I don't feel like driving to the bottle shop anymore.
But how many people have you got in that village?
Oh, man, there's a thing in my phone. One day I called 23 people in the same day.
Hoping to get a different answer?
No, just because I knew that I needed to keep talking. And it just, so I was going to be safe that day.
Okay. How many years into being sober?
That was in the first 2 years, that one.
Okay.
Yeah. It was
You're
tough.
14 years now, did you
Nearly,
say?
Nearly there. I'm about a month off that.
Okay.
But
did you get a little badge or something?
Oh, they give you, I don't know, it's anonymous. I'm not supposed to talk about it.
Okay. I got a mate who's just gone over 30.
Right, wow.
And he went back to San Francisco, which is the first place that he went to, you know, go back to the, you know, the meeting, you know, walk in those doors, the same doors that started the whole thing. And
West Hollywood, the...
he's amazing.
Log cabin in West Hollywood, gay meetings, because the guy that I saw who had what I wanted was a gay bloke. And it was amazing. I was like, how do you do that? He goes, come with me. And I sat there the first couple of meetings I went
to. You trusted him?
Well, it was like, how do you... Like, we were at this very fancy party. Like, how do you do that? How do you go to a party with people like this? And that guy and that guy and that guy and that girl and that guy, and not just be munted and make a dick of yourself. Because I can't seem to not do that. But you are the life of the party and you can do it without drinking. And I've never seen anybody do that. I'd like to know how it happens. Come with me. And that was it. I just, you know,
Do you still speak to him?
We're kind of vaguely in touch. Okay. He was in an outer orbit.
You should let him know. Does he know?
Yeah, he knows. Oh yeah, he absolutely knows. Okay. I wrote about him in the book, and I let him know. And he's a great bloke.
There's lots of people that come into your orbit in and out, I suppose, that are more important than you realize.
But is that the idea of like just checking my thoughts with somebody else? Because I know sometimes my ideas aren't the greatest ideas.
Okay.
And you can't think your way out of shitty thinking with the brain that's doing the shitty thinking.
Yeah, right.
You can't. You need to call someone.
Yeah.
And that's all it takes, really. Go and do your Gotcha for Life program, but that's all you really need, though, isn't it? You just need someone.
Yeah.
And you have a pact.
That's right.
Do they need to know about the pact?
Well, I say to people, like I spoke to a very big company yesterday, their leaders in their company. And I was like, this company, by the way, something happens to you, they replace you inside of a week, a month. Like maybe some of you are quite high up, so it might take a month of like someone headhunting or whatever, but you're done. Like you're forgotten. I've asked you to write down a list of the people you love and adore and can't imagine living without. See that list? And I got them to write it, not put in a computer. See those people? You need to make sure those people and you are okay. So give yourself a mark out of 10 for all those people. How are you traveling within those relationships? Minute silence. Anyone got a 7 out of 10 or below?
Every hand.
Every hand.
Every hand.
Anyone got a 5? Every hand. Anyone got a 3? Most hands. I'm like, okay. I bet you, as soon as I finish here and you go to a morning break, you'll check your phones, you'll check your emails, you'll get back to any of your business because you've been offline for an hour. What about that person 3 out of 10? Why don't you give them a call? So I've just been in this thing. I don't quite understand it all yet, but one thing I have worked out is I'm not looking after you as well as I thought, and I bloody love you, and that's the end of it. So I'm going to do my best to do whatever I need to do to make sure that I'm not a 3 next time I write your name down. They might sit back and go, are you mad? What are you talking about? Because they haven't been involved in the whole process. You started a slightly weird conversation that's outside of banter that you can now have a conversation moving forward. That's what I'm talking about, being real with the people that are real with you, working out who your real people are and fucking everyone else off. I've got this thing called the fuck off. It's like you can fuck off, you can fuck off, you can fuck off. Go through your phone, and if the last time you've spoken to someone is over 2 months ago and they haven't come back and checked in on you, fuck them off. I've got a mate of mine, well-known mate. We've got this pact where I'm like, you got to go through your phone again because you're getting too busy. Go through your phone. So if you get rid of that person in your phone, next time they ring you, it comes up as a
who's this
caller ID, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Don't fucking pick it up. They'll leave a message. Then you can make a decision. But if you look down and go, oh, it's that guy that always wants tickets, or oh, it's that guy that, oh, that, you're not in your life anymore. Fuck him off. Get him out of your phone. So that's what we've been doing. So we did. Said the same thing on Triple M the other day, and a bloke rang up. He said, I got rid of 70 people in one day. I said, God, you must feel so much freer carrying all those idiots on your back all the time. They're not good for you. You're good for them. You're great for them, but they're doing nothing for you. Fuck them off.
It's a lot of it. It's quite a thing, though, to have the self-worth, because so many of us, we will measure our self-worth by the company we keep.
Yeah.
It's why people want to get backstage at a gig. I will have more value if I have access to these people. Therefore, it rubs off on me. You know, it's this association thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So we can have that feeling, I can't get rid of that guy because that guy is this bloke. He's the thing that does it. I can't never speak to that person again because I'm a person who doesn't know someone like that. And if I know someone like that, then I'm a better person.
You can absolutely talk to them again, but he's going to have to leave a message, right? You're not picking up on the fourth ring going, hey, Tony, hey, Susie, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Tony's going, oh, that's okay. And then you'll get a thing and you'll go, I'm making a decision now.
Yeah.
Do I want Tony in my life or not? Is it worth the backstage ticket? There's that great story. I think it was in The Sopranos or something like that where a guy owed a guy $20 and this young guy was walking with an older guy and this bloke runs across the street and the young guy chases after him, doesn't find him, comes back to the older guy and goes, what are you chasing him for? And he goes, he owes me $20. He said, do you like the guy? And he goes, no, he's a bum. He goes, so for $20, you never have to talk to him again. because the guy's running away from you. He goes, it's the best $20 you'll ever spend. Just get these people out of your life. It's a really, really good way of looking at it, because we want to keep surrounding ourselves with people and stuff. No, no, small village.
Yeah,
people that with no judgment, who love you no matter what. They don't care about you being on TV. They don't care about anything. They just care about the fact that they want to hang with you and they love your family and they know what you're about. That group gets smaller and smaller as you get older. That's your village.
You've got to be careful of it, because it does certainly once children show up and work pressures and on. But this mortgage number keeps coming up every month. I just have to make this. I've got to meet this.
Figure.
No matter what. These children are hungry. Those shoes don't fit. Why not? Oh, keep growing.
Your
priorities shift, right?
Of course.
Why is it important to put, what are some ways that we can stop that attrition of those close people to us?
Be in contact with them. There's so many people that, like, when I ask people to send a text message to someone they love and adore, and I get them to write, I love you, I miss you, see you soon, kiss, hug, send it. Everyone giggles, laughs. We're a big room. We're all doing it together. We feel safe. People come back to me later on socials when how they can get hold of me and go, I sent it to a mate that I hadn't seen for 6 years. He's like a brother. But for whatever, they've lost contact, there's a little something's gone on, they haven't quite dealt with it, or it's been too long now, I won't worry about it.
Yeah.
Just getting in contact, making that connection is key, but it takes effort and it takes time.
Yeah.
Don't wait for someone else to do it. If you think that person is someone you want to be around, go and contact them. It's so easy these days. Don't even have to speak to them. You can send them a text, send them an email, whatever it might be. But make that connection and don't think that they're going to necessarily do it. If you believe that's what you want, go and get it.
And the good news with this
is, be lazy.
You can Marie Kondo this as well, because if they don't write back to you, then you get to go, beautiful.
I'm done here.
Put this to bed.
Fuck off.
I love you, mate. When I see you wildly by a pool somewhere on holidays and I go, hey, there you are, I'll feel thrilled, but I won't feel sad.
Yeah.
And that's a beautiful thing, because people have choices. If they want to be in touch again, they will.
That's what I'm talking about with this list with your phone as well. Yeah. It all sort of combines together again. And at the end of the day, the people that you love and adore and can't imagine living without, that is small.
Yeah.
But most of us don't look after those as well as we look after people at work. We put so much worth on that type of relationship and not on the ones that are the most important to us. And that is sad. I had 17 people in my village. I've cut it down to 9. Doesn't mean I don't love those 8, but they're not getting the absolute primo platinum everything every day type, because I haven't got the time and effort to do that. But those 9, my 3 children, my wife, mum and dad and a couple of mates, they're getting it all.
Really? What does that look like?
24/7. Anything, anytime. If I can't do it, I'll find someone else that can help you. You're never on your own ever about anything. No judgment, no, warts and all conversations. I can actually tell you my saddest moment, my most vulnerable moment, and I know that you won't laugh in my face. I know you'll give it the respect it requires. But that's taken me, I always thought that I probably before Gotcha for Life, I had a huge bunch of mates. Blokes you'd have beers with. Oh, they're my best mates. They're good blokes. I love it. I love going to I went to the SCG. I was doing the test match. Go down after we called the game for Triple M, having a few beers in the members with a few blokes. Buddy, fantastic. Saw you last year. Love your work. Thanks. I loved that. A great night. Go home in an Uber. Few beers on board. Happy days. But I'll see him next year.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the guys that are in my absolute village, they're getting me whenever they want me.
Yeah, right.
You know, and there's messages today from people all over the world waking up at different times where there's messages there. Can you please give me some advice on this? I woke up the other night. This is how I felt. Do you think I'm being silly? Yeah, being super vulnerable. I never had that before. But as soon as I realized that's what I needed to do to get that back, it's gold.
If anybody who owns a car knows that you've got a dashboard and there's like sometimes a light comes on, and then if another light comes on, I should probably, once it starts making a noise, generally kind of going, what are some warning signs that people may not realize are actual warning signs that, you know what, mate, you probably need to get this sorted, because where you probably don't realize that you're already the frog in the water and the temperature's rising.
There's a few different things. I mean, from my point of view, it's if you're worrying alone too much about anything, I know that's a harder one to sort of gauge because we do have worries that come in and out all the time. Mm. But if you're having thoughts all the time that are dark and whatever, as soon as you can open your mouth and ask for help, the better. But for me, it's the lack of sleep. Mm. It's if you're more drinking than you'd normally do, a bit more snappier, you know, not as calm, not as collected. Normally someone close to you would pick up on stuff.
Mm.
From what you told me you were going through, someone might have been saying that to you, whether you ignored it or went with it or not.
I was very, very, I had someone very close to me who was, and I was in therapy and I was like, I knew something was very, very wrong. So I was seeing doctors all the time. But, yeah, absolutely, man. I like couldn't put 4 hours of complete, like 4 hours of sleep together towards before everything really.
Well, sleep is number one. Yeah. I mean, you got to take water. Food you can give and take a little bit. You can definitely mm-hmm. go days without that. Water and sleep.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, and if you're tired, as I said, and you're in pain, that combination, that's when you make a permanent decision based on a temporary situation.
And that can be anything. That can be, oh, fuck it, I'm breaking up with you. That can be, I'm quitting this job. That can be...
Well, it's relationships and money normally. Yeah. You'd say that 90% of suicides are based around those things. You combine those two things together, which happens a lot, then men in particular don't have a chance if they haven't built any mental fitness.
Yeah.
Because we're just like a matchstick in the wind. We just get blown over.
Yeah.
Where the ladies tend to be a bit more, it's not just a matchstick, it's some growth there. So that it holds it all together a little bit more. But in saying that, 7 men, 2 women, most, in terms of the 65,000 attempt, they're mainly women, you know. So are they a cry for help more? Are they whatever it might be? Men tend to be devastating when they decide to do it.
Tell me about, because I think a part of this is an inability to have, you know, I guess a safe and healthy emotional expression of vulnerability. Let's call it that. All right, which can start, and the research is there. It's like, don't cry, stop being such a fucking idiot.
Well, that's what we've been told.
Suck it up. Yeah. Right. And then, because this is, I mean, we have to talk about this part. Like, I sit around at there's a big park down the road here, and I see Wolfie there playing. All right. He's 4. There's maybe 100 kids. All right. Half of them are boys. They're all about, by the time they get to 5 or 6, like in ride bikes, they're not there. They're on the slides and shit. And I look at, like, oh, yeah, there's 50 young boys here between the age of 2 and 4, 4 and a half. Like, what do the stats say about what might happen, like, 20 years from now? How many of these kids, these little boys, will punch their partner in the face because that is the only option they have to deal with frustration? Like, look, will choose to punch their partner in the face. What parent is sitting around going, can't wait till little Jaden grows up? Sorry, I'm really throwing Jaden's under the bus.
Yeah, poor Jaden.
Can't wait till, you know, Junior. I mean,
Johnny got it for years. Well, so probably, as long as you stick away from Johnny.
I listen to too much mid-flight brawls. Jaden, Caden, Braden, you know, it's too much. Like, no parent wants their child to be the perpetrator. But, like, how many of those young boys will choose violence instead of making another choice at the moment? So tell me about...
Well, that's why it's so important to get into the primary schools to give them the emotional muscle worked over. I mean, the exercises to work these invisible muscles is the key, right? About a whole lot of things, not just about suicidal thoughts, but just being able to manage anger, manage their emotions. You know, I go into schools now and ask kids how do you feel? It's fine, you know, or angry.
Yeah.
Or okay. They can't actually express anything outside of that.
Teenagers, they're monosyllabic. Like,
no, yeah. Well, I mean, even like younger, it was really interesting, really interesting, a little bit off topic, but I saw, you might have seen it as well. They ask mums and dads who they'd like to have dinner with. I don't know if you've seen this. They go, if you could pick anyone in the world you could have dinner with, who would it be, dead or alive? They go, oh, Elvis, that'd be good. Kennedy, the Clintons, sports stars all around the world, da-da-da-da. Then they get the kids to come in. They ask the same question. They go, Mum and Dad, I'd like them all. I'd like my dad. I'd love my dad to be home for dinner because we don't have dinner with Dad very much, and the dad and the mum are watching it. So they've immediately gone to celebrity, and the kids have just worked it out. I just want to be with my mum and dad and my brother and sister. And it just shows how... That's when they're making really cool decisions. Yeah. They're so much smarter than we give them credit for.
Yeah.
And that's why we need to be in primary school saying to them, this is okay to feel this way.
Yeah.
Like I remember being told I was a sissy and a girl for crying at the age of 5 or 6. Pymble Public School, really lovely area on the North Shore of Sydney. Here I am. And I was like, oh, I'm not allowed to do that. Oh, I didn't realize that. Or someone's brother was older and told the bloke at my age, oh, my brother said you can't do that anymore, or however they do it. And I'm like, oh. So we've got a whole lot of boys that just shut that whole thing off.
But it's not like the energy goes somewhere.
Bloody oath. And it goes, end up making shit decisions. Drugs, alcohol, fighting, anger, those type of things, rather than, oh, no, it's okay to feel human. Like, why is it okay to cry when your team wins the grand final? And it's okay to cry at a funeral, but outside of that, oh, come on, mate. It's like, well, are you fucking serious? Good, bad, and different. You nearly cried then talking about an ad that I described. You didn't even see it.
It's true.
Telstra ad comes on. Qantas. I mean, that guy in London coming home to see mum at Christmas without telling mum.
Stop.
He hasn't told his mum she's coming. And then he turns up. I'm just giving it these ones. And the choir starts singing the Qantas song at the test match. It's all over.
It's good. A good cadence and a good hug.
Just bloody perfect.
Yeah,
but that's where we should be comfortable.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean we burst into tears every 5 minutes. It doesn't mean we have a deep and meaningful conversation all the time. But it allows us to be human, good, bad, indifferent. They're the emotions.
Yeah.
And looking over the shoulder all the time at the Joneses going, well, look on Instagram. They just had a beautiful holiday.
Oh.
I wish I'd had that holiday. I mean, that if I could cancel something, I'd love to cancel social media.
It's not great for you. The comparison is not good for you. And we talked a lot about being in touch with people. I guess part of the I don't understand it. If someone was to say to you, hey, I'm not coping, I understand why people might not want to have that conversation. Because if they were to ask, are you okay? And they say no.
Yeah.
What do you do next?
What do I do now? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So if people are listening or people do get a phone call or a text, what do you do?
First thing to do is go, thank you so much for telling me you're no longer on your own.
Yeah.
That's it, right? That's a starting point. And you know what? Be vulnerable. Say, I don't know what to do now, but you know what? You and I are going to work this out together because we can go and get the help together now that you don't have to worry about alone. So heaps of people have asked me that and I'm trying to fix them. That's why I failed the Lifeline course because people are ringing. This is the dodgy calls where they stop to see if you're good enough and I'd try to fix them.
Oh, right, yeah.
My skill set, better to raise money for you, better to go off my journey and make sure Lifeline are okay. That was my journey. So I soon worked out I don't need to have all the answers. Take away your ego and go, thank you so much for telling me. Right, what are we going to do about it now? And then you go on that journey together and that's building another village up. And then a doctor comes on board. He's part of your village. May not be as close, but he's got a bit of skills. Counselor, tell a few of your mates. A few of your mates turn around and say, actually, I've been seeing a counselor now for a couple of years. What do you mean? All these discussions start happening because you've gone to a subject matter that was normally taboo and all of a sudden it's open. I've been seeing this lady called Leanne now for 6 years. I saw her twice a week for the first 2 years because she's really helping me. My wife, my children, 5,000 people from Triple M because I just give her number out and people go and see her. It's a beautiful thing to do, to be able to have someone that you can share this sort of stuff with. But it's not me. It's my network now. So anyone listening to this, if you're going through stuff, tell someone or get hold of whatever we're doing. We've got that network there that can look after you. Just please don't worry alone. But if that person comes to you, respect it. Respect what a huge call it is. And then say, right. Oh, righto. That's okay. I don't have the answers, but we'll work them out together. There's nothing wrong with that.
That phone call is a call from someone who's rapidly running out of options.
Yep.
All right. And pretty soon, and I know what it feels like, your brain just says, oh, there's one way out of this. And that's not a great way out of this.
Yeah.
By calling somebody else, you're calling someone who's got a wide angle lens pot on. All right. And they're thinking, I always say this, like, I need to think about the problem with someone who's not using my brain to think about it.
That's it.
All right.
Because
you're a decent person and I trust you.
Yeah.
So, but right now I can't even picture the solutions.
Yeah.
All right. Like, but I often say, like, if you were to come around here and I blindfolded you and you met Audrey and he said, and I said, okay, now, Gus, I blindfolded you on the way here. What color are the cars out on the street? You'd be like, well, I know they're out there.
Yeah.
But it's that feeling. It's like, I know there's a way to get out of this. I just, there's a chasm of possibility. I can't, my brain will not let me go there.
Yeah.
Understanding that that is my brain's ability to try to keep me safe. All right.
Yeah.
Not allowing myself to think about too much at once. So if I call somebody else, I trust them. They're going to have some ideas.
Correct.
It might not be the right thing first time, but it's going to be better than the thing that I don't want to do.
Bloody hell. And it's the village, right? You're building your village up of people. And that's what the greatest thing you can do is share good stuff with people, share bad stuff with people.
Yeah.
We're better with other people. And that's not necessarily everybody, but even people that are that don't want to necessarily be with lots of people, to have someone in your life that you can share the odd thing with or to talk about stuff is really cool. But most of us, if we have a birthday party, we're not sitting there by ourselves. When you're having a tough time, don't sit there by yourself.
Yeah.
Get involved with your village, good and bad, no judgment. And if you've got the right people, and sometimes people come to me and say, look, I did ask someone, and you know, they end up being a bit of a dick about it. I go, well, ask the next person. Because Smithy may not be the greatest guy to have a chat with there, but he might be really good to have a beer with.
Yeah, right.
Or Robbo over there might be this or that.
Yeah.
It does knock blokes for six sometimes because they do ask once. They get such a belt back saying, what? Then they never ask again.
And certainly if you've got a sick brain, your brain will go, every time you ask, this will happen.
I'm not doing that again.
Yeah, it's your brain changes, you know, distorts reality.
Or if you go to a counsellor, on average, you've got to see six counsellors to find someone you connect with.
I call it like dating. Like I date them, you know. And I've got to, you know.
But a lot of people, if you're not in the right mind, you go, I've seen a doctor. He gave me that medication. I felt worse. I've tried that. It's done. It's like, no. You got, like, I found the person the first time, which means it could take you 12 times. On average, it's six, you know, but I'm thinking from a healthy frame of mind. You're thinking from a not healthy frame of mind. So it makes it difficult.
The other thing I would say to that is, it's never a burden on the other person.
Never.
And I know this. If I get a call from someone who needs my help, it's like, oh, mate, you have just saved me 10 straight minutes of not having to deal with the noise in my brain.
Thank you.
I'm thrilled. And it's lovely. And the idea of sharing a problem, it just popped in my head on the way back from gym this morning. There's a roundabout on the way here. P-plate Hilux blew through the roundabout. I'm on the bike. I lock up. I'm on the big cargo bike, right? So lock up the back seat and I'm like, you know, manage to hold it together like I'm a crusty demon or whatever. And I'm like, you're fucking kidding me. Like, whatever. And then
he didn't even see you.
I think he did, but he gunned backed it himself. Thinking he's going to do it. It's like, I ended up missing him, but thankfully I rode in anticipation because I ride bicycles, ride motorbikes. So you always ride like no one can see you and everyone wants to kill you. Very important. And as I'm riding after this, going just like kind of down regulating after that, I could see there's a motorbike behind him. The motorbike came up next to me and he's like, mate, I fucking saw that coming. Da, 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 da. And I said, yeah, lucky I was on the Harley. It would have been a very different story. He goes, yeah. And I just said to him, I was like, I'm just glad that you saw it because I don't feel so alone now. And he just, the smile on his face is like, yeah, I know, right? Like, there's someone else just, yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah.
That was shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
And you were lucky.
Okay. And then I came home and you know, when you ride motorbikes, they teach you very quickly, like, if you, down regulation is the best fucking thing you can do. Because if you have a near miss or whatever, great, but you can't be having that kind of high, you know, heart rate and shallow breathing because next corner, you're going to have to possibly deal with something bigger. Oh. You need to be as calm as fuck straight away.
Okay.
So as I was locking the bike up, I was like, wow, like 45 seconds ago, I was nearly under a Hilux and here I am in my driveway feeling fine. This is nice. Well, bear in mind, I'm on selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors and I'm like having a fair amount of shit. Like I've got some
stuff
I'm
going
juicing,
on.
I'm juicing, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm an exogenous kind of serotonin help.
Yeah.
But it was nice. It was, and but just that moment, the guy smile on his face.
Yeah.
It was like an old bloke, beard, open face, helmet, yeah, you know, the old man sit up straight bike. And it was like, yeah, man. Yeah, I get that.
I'm with you.
And off he went.
Well, talking about traffic sort of stories, I remember one day I was sitting at a set of lights and this sort of truck came up, one of those small mini tippers.
Yeah.
And in the passenger seat was a dog, beautiful dog. You know, face out the window jobby. And I was like, hello, mate, like that. And the bloke sort of looks, he goes, Gus. And I went, hey, brother, how are you? And he goes, I'm no good, mate, like that. And I'm like, next left, duck in there like that. 45 minutes we spent together.
Wow.
Right? He goes, if I hadn't seen you, he said, I love Triple M. I've never seen you before. I've never seen Matty Johns. I've never seen anyone like that. I'm at these traffic lights, and the only reason I haven't killed myself is because of that dog. And you're smiling to the dog. That makes me interested. And I look, and it's you. And I'd heard you on the radio talking about your mate, suicide, blah, blah, blah. And now I'm talking to you. I still talk to this guy regularly. He's alive because of that little thing. So talk about those little moments where
he reached out. He said he had the balls to say.
Well, he looked and went, and I said, "Oh, how are you? You know, as I'm sure you've had lots of people go, g'day, mate, how are you going?" You go, "Yeah, how are you? All good?" And he goes, "No good, mate." And I went, "Next left." Mate. I was coming home from Brekkie Radio, so it was 10:30 in the morning. I had the rest of the day until the kids' 3 o'clock pickup. So no skin off my nose. Boom, went in 45, and that was 2011. So 13 years ago.
Yeah. You're an amazing bloke, mate. Thank you so much for coming in. I'm glad you know the work you're doing.
Pleasure. No, well, Gotcha for Life is there for anyone. So
yeah.
Well, please just get involved. Gotcha for Life. We've got a mental fitness gym. It's free.
That's awesome.
Send your tips every single day if you get involved in that. So it's good to talk to you, mate. Thanks for being so open and honest with me and vulnerable, you know?
Well, I started this show in 2013 because I wasn't hearing the kind of conversations I needed to hear.
Mm.
All right? I needed to hear, like, you can't be what you can't see. All right. And it's the same with the sobriety stuff. It's like, great. You had a really fucking big bender and you got divorced and now you're like, tell me how you dealt with today when you were in line at the bank and they closed the window in front of you. Tell me how you didn't do the yelling thing because I need to know how to do that because I don't like doing that.
Yeah.
It's like a solutions kind of focus of like just possibility. Like I wasn't hearing that. And so I started this show so I could just go have these kind of conversations. And
curiosity.
I'm fucking grateful for it, man. And that was Gus Warland. What a truly, truly decent human being. He is so solid, like physically and emotionally. Like if you watch this on YouTube, you'll see he's a solid dude. He's also emotionally just a freaking pillar, the guy. I was so grateful to connect with him. He's doing great work. And there's a lot to take in there. So I'll probably come back on Friday with a little bit more to reflect on that because, I don't know, sometimes I hear conversations like that or I have a conversation like that. I need to kind of let it sit in my head for a bit and then let it stew around, let it bounce around in my head, bounce off the world I live in, and then I might have some more thoughts about it. But I'll be back here on Friday with that. Thank you so much to all the people that helped me make the show. Thank you so much to Matt Sofo and Conrad Henricks on audio post. Thanks to Mikey Ward on video post. Toe Hider did all the music for this show and all the shows. Monica and Ben helped me keep the lights on at OGTV. Thank you for listening. Without you, there's no show. If you need me, drop us a DM on Instagram. That's where you can find me. If you've got any questions, whatever you need, that's where you'll find it. If you want to get on the mailing list, the link is in the show notes. Just jump in there. I'll see you back here on Friday.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.